by students, for students.
U-R-Y.
Hi.
Hello, everyone. I'm Timmy.
And I'm Zara, and we're the BAME Raps for Derwent College.
So the name of today's show is You Ask,
We Answer. So over the past few weeks, we've been collecting both questions and experiences about racial insensitivity around campus. So all the scenarios we use today are anonymous, but they are real experiences.
So this is our third event for Stephen Lawrence Week. Stephen Lawrence's death was a pivotal moment regarding conversations about police brutality and issues of racism within the UK. Now, tomorrow marks his actual anniversary, which is the 22nd of April. But today we're going to be answering a selection of questions to create practical change regarding racism. So let's hop right into our first question.
So the question was, do you have any tips on explaining the difference between cultural appropriation and appreciation? And at what point does something become cultural appropriation?
Oh, that's a really good question.
So yeah, I agree. So I think the major difference between cultural appropriation and appreciation is context and attitude. And an example could be wearing a bindi. If I was to go to like a Hindu wedding or festival and wear a bindi, then that would be completely appropriate. I'm appreciating the culture in a space created by Hindus where they're celebrating their own culture and rituals. If I was to go to a music festival or wear a bindi as a fashion statement, then that would become cultural appropriation, as I'm demonstrating a lack of understanding of the culture and religious significance of a bindi and wearing it as an accessory, which is disrespectful and it can make people really uncomfortable. And I think a large part of appropriation versus appreciation is who has the dominant culture. People who live in the UK adopting aspects of the culture and their traditions is not appropriation. Appropriation occurs when those within the dominant culture take and benefit from the culture of a marginalised group.
Yeah, so I think an example that is often used to explain cultural appropriation is hairstyles, specifically black hairstyles being worn on non-black individuals. This includes things such as dreadlocks, braids, or other black hairstyles such as cornrows. The reason this is cultural appropriation is because it is a protective hairstyle for people of colour and is therefore a necessity. You know, it helps our hair to stop breaking, and in cold weathers where our hair gets very brittle and dry, it really helps us to lock in the moisture. However, in many professional industries, it isn't seen as a necessity, but instead, people of colour are reprimanded for these hairstyles and they're called unprofessional, for example. On the other hand, if a white counterpart was to wear the same hairstyles, it'd be seen as funky or even a fashion statement.
This is actually also an example of how assimilation affects what is and isn't cultural appropriation. Because beauty standards treat whiteness as the epitome of beauty. People of colour are expected to emulate that by changing their appearance, you know, like straightening their hair, for example. This is also not cultural appropriation, straightening your hair, because it is not something exclusive to whiteness. And so when it's used as a counter argument, it's actually quite inaccurate.
Yeah, I 100% agree. On to the next question. What are some ways, subtle or not, to challenge racism when it's witnessed? Oh, this is a really, really good question. I think this is definitely, my response will definitely be targeted towards white counterparts as opposed to black people. I think a lot of the time people, when they see an incident of racism, want to shout at the person or be angry at the person who has said these offences, and rightly so. I think a lot of the time when I've experienced racism, I've almost been in shock to the point where I don't say anything, because like it's not like processed through my head. I'm like, surely that was not just said. But I think as white counterparts, especially when you see your friend experience racism, it's really important that you check that they're okay. I think it's important to not give the antagonist attention that they want, instead making sure that your friend is okay, that like they're like feeling safe and how they've just processed that. I think they should definitely be your priority and the focal point of dealing with this issue. Do they want to go to report it? Do they want to leave the said environment that this comment was made? Do they want to speak to the person after, or do they want you to go and speak to the person? Witnessing racism as well and making sure that you don't stay silent as a bystander, I think is something that is really important and something that is slowly being adopted within our current society. I think a lot of the time people would see lots of this injustice and just be quiet and feel sorry and be like, well, it's not me, so I shouldn't get involved. But I think seeing something and saying something as well is definitely like a step into the right direction.
And we've also wanted to add that when we asked BAME students how they felt when they experienced racism, they felt really isolated because of their ethnicity and their nationality. You know, it's a new country and it's a new language and now they're experiencing racism, and that they felt they had anxiety and paranoia and they were concerned about their safety and well-being, and also feeling like everyone judged them based on their appearance and nothing else.
Yeah, I think another thing is racism isn't just physical, it can also be verbal abuse or torment. So apart from verbally challenging your peers, I think there are many services that you can access to report incidents of racism. So specific to York University, there's something called the Report and Support Tool. You can also speak to the head of your college, and you can either make an anonymous or non-anonymous report about the incident, and there can be a formal investigation into what you've said. But regardless of whether or not it's an anonymous or non-anonymous report, there will be a record made of the incident. If you feel like it's more your mental health that has been affected, there are services such as Open Door and Student Hub to provide support, or you can speak to your GP or services such as Nightline and Samaritans to talk through any issues you're having. All of this information is also available on one of our posts on Dell and Welfare page.
So we also understand that it can be really difficult to report racism and have quite an effect on your well-being. And the BAME students that we surveyed have said that they often don't report racism because the people who have made an offensive comment see it as just a joke, or it can become a bit of a he said, she said, that with no proof. Or really a big worry is that the university's response would be minimal and demonstrative, and that there was no guarantee of action and they didn't think the issue would actually be followed through. And also, quite sadly, that it was too difficult to challenge racist attitudes, and so no point in reporting.
But a bit of a positive, or the silver lining, Zara and I are working really hard on some projects with other BAME reps to offer more support to students who are affected by racism. These can be anonymous forms of support or better reporting facilities, and sort of like a code of conduct to make the procedure more known and reporting racism a lot easier. We also want to have maybe more harsh repercussions for students who have been racist, so that they make students who are victims of racism feel safer.
Now that we've answered that, let's jump on to the next question that we got. What is a microaggression? So I've stolen a definition from somebody called Daryl W. Sue, who has apparently written two books on microaggression, in a Vox article, and defines microaggression as the everyday slights, indignities, put downs and insults that people of colour, women, LGBT populations and those who are marginalised experience in their day-to-day interactions with people. Microaggressions can often be presented as a compliment or a joke, but are based on offensive and racist stereotypes. An example of a microaggression that I experience all the time is the way people ask me about my ethnicity as someone who's mixed race. I get, "Where are you from?" So I tell people I'm from London. "No, where were you born?" I tell them I was born in America. No, where are your parents from? Well, I tell them my mum is American and my dad is Scottish. And then I usually get, "No, where are they, or where am I from originally?" Big emphasis on the word originally. And the thing is, it's actually not offensive to wonder what my ethnicity is. But what's annoying is the roundabout way that people ask, and the way that strangers on the street come up to me and think they're entitled to know. And the question that they really want to ask, but are too polite, but not polite, because obviously if you were polite, you wouldn't come up to a stranger on the street and ask them their ethnicity. Is, the question is, what is your ethnicity? And it's, the thing is, my ethnicity isn't a secret. Like, it's a really big part of who I am, and I don't have a problem telling my friends or people who ask politely, but it's the entitlement and the subtle suggestion that I do not belong here and I can see that you don't belong here in your face that gets to be really annoying.
Yeah, it can definitely be really frustrating. And I think the really important thing to note about microaggressions is that they are small and constant. Mm-hmm. And I think this means that a lot of people who aren't experiencing microaggressions find it very hard to identify. I mean, we see police brutality overtly, not just in America, but also in the UK. And that's clear. You can be like, that is racism. But microaggressions, as the subtext word micro suggests, is a very small, it's a small thing, but it happens so repetitively that it builds up and it becomes like this thing that is really frustrating. And I feel like oftentimes BAME students, including myself, have like within their day would have already experienced a plethora of insensitivities, and it's just adding up that my white counterparts aren't even aware of. For example, like being followed around when I go shopping, being like asked for like my full name and like my ID multiple times, or to take off my mask, or just making it seem like I'm doing something wrong when the same security or checks don't happen for my white peers.
Mm-hmm. That's like the reason that my name is Zara, which is an Arabic name rather than a different Arabic name, is because my parents didn't want me to have that constant incorrect pronunciation and the, your name is so hard to pronounce, I'm just going to call you something else. I'm going to give you a nickname that so many people of colour with non-English names get daily.
Yeah, I mean, unlike Zara, I have a very long first name. My first name, or my full first name, is Oluwa Timileyin, which I shortened to Timmy out of preference. However, with most Yoruba names, they are actually almost like phrases or positive affirmations. For example, my full first name actually means God is my support or anchor. And this name really has a big role in my identity as a person. And I think it means a lot to people. It gives them a sense of identity. And when our names have significant meaning, which is often belittled, it's really, really frustrating to deal with.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, like, we're all guilty of not knowing how to pronounce someone's name. And yeah, that's definitely completely normal. You know, like, it's natural that names with sounds you're not used to are going to take a bit more practice. But what we need to do, instead of coming up with a nickname or commenting on how hard someone's name is to say, just ask them. Just ask them how to say it again, because practice makes perfect.
100%. 100%, Zara.
So let's jump into the next question, which is, what can students of all races do to help tackle issues of racism on campus / at uni? So I think one of the most important things we can all do is call out racism when we see and hear it, especially if it's addressed towards your like POC friends. Because when people say racist things, you know, like slurs, like offensive comments, whether they're directed at you or not, the best thing you can do as a white person is say something, you know, tell them why what they've said is racist. And like, because experiencing racism, especially when you're surrounded by white peers, is really uncomfortable as well as really hurtful. And like, yeah, all BAME students have a personal stake that white students don't, that makes calling out racism much more difficult.
Yeah, just to add it onto that, like, experiencing racism firsthand at uni, it's honestly like a shock. I don't know how to explain it. Like, my brain, even though I've got into uni, so I clearly have some form of intelligence, my IQ just drops to like -5. And it's like my brain can't comprehend, like, I've actually just experienced that. And I'm not just talking about microaggressions now. I'm talking about outwardly forms of racism. For example, I was called the N-word. And like, you're actually in shock. Like, it's like, has this really just happened? And then I have to like almost you know, start to think strategically about how I react to this. If I react aggressively, I'm that angry black girl. Mm. If I say nothing, they think it's fine. And if I come back to them a week later, they're like, well, it's a little too late. And so it's really hard to actually just decide how to deal with a form of racism. And sometimes, not sometimes, all the time that I deal with it, it has a really big impact on my mental health and my just sense of worth. So sometimes I really do just want to rely on my white counterparts to actually step in for me and fight that battle for me.
And I think like the same goes for like any type of discrimination, like Islamophobia, homophobia, anti-Semitism, like transphobia, just some examples. Like when you don't have a personal stake, like in an offensive comment, it's so much easier to call out. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, you are more likely to be taken seriously. If I was to be called a slur, like if I say, oh, that's really offensive and here's why, they would probably take my white friends more seriously. And I know that I sometimes ignore like racist comments or things that I hear from my peers, because I find having to explain racism and then going on to not be understood and then being expected to always have to educate on racism makes it how people see you. And that's really exhausting. And so that's why I do appreciate when my white peers call out racism.
Yeah, definitely. So the next question is, where is a good place to start improving your mindset and the mindset of others regarding racism? So I think before we start calling other people out, it really is a time of personal reflection. Mm. I think everyone has bias, and I think that is just natural because it is based on preconceived notions that we have, and it's all about how we've grown up. And I feel like a lot of white people sometimes may not even be aware of their bias because they've only grown up around other white people. And I think it's really important that you therefore go and reflect and see where you could be biased and how your opinions about race that you might be potentially unaware of can be insensitive to people of different races. And then I think after you've done this reflection, because I think it'd be impossible to like know everything and read everything, is to then go in these specific areas that you think you are personally very biased or insensitive, to go and educate yourself. And this goes beyond just reading Instagram infographics. As much as that is informative, it's also just the start, I think. And I feel like there are many articles, there are many people who do discussions on it, there are hundreds of podcasts that you can go and read, and we've even put together a list of some of the things that you can do to educate yourself on one of our earlier posts. So I hope this is helpful. Before we answer our final question, we just wanted to remind you of who to contact about racism and what to do for change. So as we mentioned before, specific to the University of York, there is a report and support tool. You can speak to the head of your college and file an anonymous report of the incident, or non-anonymous if you want to name names. Just a reminder that if you don't put names, there can't really be many repercussions. But if you feel comfortable enough to put names, then that is when they can put a formal investigation in place and it will go in the person's permanent record. But also, I think it's really important to say that if unfortunately you were involved in any physical harm due to your race, you feel like your life is in danger because of your race, or there's persistent hate speech and evidence of this hate speech, you can actually just go straight to the police. Because I think people often are like, oh, racism is just bad behavior. It's not just bad behavior, it's intolerable behavior, and it won't be accepted. And I feel like if you want to go to the police, then you should definitely do that. But of course, me and Zara are also here if you want to talk. We will share our Instagrams, and just feel free to speak to us if you see us as well.
Mm-hmm. And of course, like, we recognise that the system the university has in place is not a perfect system.
Yeah.
We want to make it a better system. And we've spoken to Andrew, who's getting now in contact with the report and support people, and is trying to make the whole process more obvious to students to encourage reporting. But I think, you know, that's on a much bigger level. But when we talk about you know, educating our peers, then it's really important to obviously look at yourself first, because no one's an expert on racism. You know, we're the BAME reps and we're not experts on racism, but, you know, recognize your own stereotypes and unconscious bias. You know, like, being anti-racist, it's not just sharing infographics. You know, read them, do what they're telling you to do, like, be donating, be signing petitions, and be addressing racism when you see it, particularly when it's your friends and family, because that's when it's the hardest. And I think also recognizing your own privilege, not expecting people to educate you, and obviously, number one, donating to our fundraiser for Stephen Lawrence.
Woo! Woo! Yeah, so you can find the link to donate on the Derwent Welfare Instagram page, or you can either message myself or Zara for the link, and we will send that to you. Also, we have a few more events for this week to raise more money. So if Zara just wants to explain some of them.
So remember, obviously there's a schedule on Instagram, but remember to be wearing something orange and tagging Derwent Welfare with the hashtag because of Stephen. That's something they advertise on the website they want you to do. So we also will be announcing winners for the raffle.
Yep. These prizes include Prosecco, which I wish I would be the winner of, but I understand. we don't run a dictatorship, so obviously we won't enter.
Unfortunately, we won't enter or win.
But if our flat wins, then take one for the team and we'll share it. But there's also some Derwent merch up for grabs, and even some art prints that I've designed. So you can also get your hands on those. And I just want to give a big thank you to everyone who has already purchased a ticket. All of these proceeds will go to our Just Giving page. And remember to please share and donate if you can.
And also,
We'll be releasing a recipe for our special orange themed cocktail, and that will be going out
on Friday.
Friday. Thank you so much. and we hope lots of you try it out and tag us in it, and I hope it's absolutely delicious. Right. Mm-hmm. So on to our final question.
What is the best thing about being a BAME rep, and your favorite thing about your culture?
Oh, okay. I want to go first for this one. So obviously I think my favorite thing about being a BAME rep is that I feel like I'm making practical change and actually taking steps towards tackling these issues that I'm affected by. Sometimes I feel like a broken record when I'm explaining how many incidences of racism I feel, but I want to like create change so that it's better for me, better for my peers, and better for people in the future. And that's not to say it doesn't go without the emotional toll. I think it can be really exhausting, and I'm sure Zara can testify to this, constantly having to almost read incidences of racism and hear about people who are really struggling because of things that I said about their race. But I think it is for the greater good. So I'm happy to be a part of it. And I think another side of it is definitely meeting lots of people. You know, I get to have lots of conversations with people and see their opinions. And it definitely helps broaden my perspective and understand other people's opinions, which helps with my course as well. And the second part of the question, what is my favorite thing about my culture? So as I mentioned earlier, I'm Nigerian. Both my parents are Nigerian. And I think the best thing about my culture is genuinely like, I'm gonna have to put it to three. I don't think I can narrow it down to one, right? The food, right? Favorite food of all time, jollof rice. I love jollof rice. Is it fried rice that I like more? See, I like a mixture, but if I was to pick one, I think I'd actually just have to go with fried rice. I also love the fashion, and I love like wearing my natives, and I just love the colors and the prints. And I love when I go to Nigeria, I get like my own tailored clothes in like different colors. That's one of my favorite things. And then finally, I think I just have to say, I think I love the language, and that's definitely something that I've learned to love over time. I think I was definitely made fun of when I was younger, and I would almost not want to pronounce my full name with the right inflection because of my white peers. But I think the Yoruba language is actually so beautiful, and I love being able to listen to my mom talking to her siblings and just learn about all the family gossip and all of that stuff. So I think one of my goals is actually to learn how to speak Yoruba. But yeah, those are some of my favorite things about my culture. What about you, Zara?
So I think I'll answer the first half first, but I think my favorite part about being the Derwent BAME rep is obviously working with the incredible Timmy.
Aww, right back at you.
Talking to him after the post was on Instagram, everyone was like, congratulations, like, good job. And it was really lovely. What I really like about being BAME rep and doing the kind of things me and Timmy are doing and what we're planning and what we've been talking about is being the kind of change that if I had been a fresher next year, I would have wanted to see when I got here. Like, because it's really hard. Like, I grew up in a pretty diverse area, and so coming to York, like, it was a bit of a shock. Like, 100%. It was not what I was used to, and so it's quite a hard adjustment. And so having that kind of like Derwent BAME community is something I think I would have really appreciated. And I would say, and oh, and obviously also, like, hopefully in the future,
fingers
my
crossed.
New favorite part of being a Derwent BAME rep will be hosting events and parties and different like D-themed fun nights. So that is my new favorite part. Hopefully June 21st,
baby.
But I would say that my favorite part of my culture, because I'm half Punjabi Pakistani, is number one, obviously the food. My very first, like, what is it, like, the very first food I ate as a baby was very first solid food I ate as a baby was a samosa that my dad gave to me because it was too spicy for my mum. And I love all sort of like Pakistani food. I think it's incredible. And I'd say my other favorite part of my culture, just like that aspect of my culture, is like the beautiful like saris and wedding clothes, because I've been to a million Pakistani weddings in my life, and they were pretty boring, but the number one, I'm a child, I'm asleep on the chair, they're going too late, they're not bringing out the food, but the number one thing, I've always seen the bride coming out in her gorgeous like red jeweled sari with the huge nose ring that connects to her ear, and like it was just all stunning, and it's something I want to have. Like, I want to have that type of wedding and get to wear the clothes, and I just love it. So I'd say that's also one of my favorite parts of my own culture. But because, you know, race and being a BAME rep, it's not just about racism. Like, we want to celebrate who we are.
Yes.
Like, being a person of color is incredible. Like, I love my race. I love who I am. Like, I love this Derwent community. And like, I want to celebrate it, not just talk about how horrible it is. So
yeah. And we want others to celebrate it too. You know, I think obviously sometimes, unfortunately, because of the environment or the culture within Britain, it is almost toxic or uncomfortable to be yourself. But once you learn to love yourself, it's so great to see other people starting to love, to learn themselves, and to also just make people more aware and just a more rounded person, because no one wants to be like a two-dimensional, boring person. Like I think it's just great to learn about other cultures, you know. And I can only speak from my experience. I can only really give a true representation of what I've been through. So I want to, you know, give people the platform to talk about their experiences and what they've, you know, experienced. My experience and Zara, despite us both being BAME reps, are very different. Being brought up Punjabi, being brought up Nigerian, that's already a big difference. So we want everyone to be able to have the platform to speak about those differences too. Yeah.
So, and I think like being ethnic, like every day, like it is difficult, but it's also incredible. And you know, we get to do this incredible thing where we're working together and we're doing this fundraiser and we're planning all these really fun activities, and that's such a blessing. Like, I'm really glad that we're here. And of course, speaking of fundraiser, don't forget to donate to our fundraiser.
Just giving, baby,
can be found on at Derwent Welfare and on Instagram. So don't forget to donate to that. But you know, I'm so glad that we're sat here recording this, you know, we're doing the work, and everyone who sat or stood listening, they're also here, they're doing the work, they care, and I really appreciate that from
thank
everyone
so
who's
much.
Listening. Thank you so much for tuning
thank you,
in.
Thank you. That's pretty much it. We hope you've enjoyed it, and we haven't been talking for too long. We hope it's been interesting and informative. And just in case you didn't hear Zara, go to our Just Giving page, donate, and it's in the Durban Welfare page link. It's on a link tree and it's called Stephen Lawrence Week fundraiser, and you can donate there. But yeah, thank you so much for tuning in and have a good day. Bye.
Thank you so
much. Bye. On air 1350 a.m. and online, this is the student radio station for the University of York. You are Y.